don't think people thought prices would ever get that low. If they did, we're all in a world of hurt.
Low oil prices for scrutiny of Alaska's minimum oil tax. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 1st. Good evening, I'm Ann Hellman. Also tonight, foster care chart it changes past the State House.
This bill aims to give people a better chance to succeed through a foster care system without damage, without being bounced between 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 homes.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
And by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
As oil continues to hover around $40 a barrel, Alaska is confronting a new reality. If prices stay this low, the state's major North Slope producers might owe no production taxes at all in the coming years. With the state already struggling to close a $4 billion budget deficit, that's not an appealing prospect. Many lawmakers say they never understood how the tax system would work at such low prices, but industry says this was always part of the deal. APRN's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
In its simplest form, Alaska's current tax regime on the North Slope is a 35% net profits tax. Bear with me for a minute. That means the state takes 35% of the profit a company earns on any given barrel of oil. There are also a range of credits they can use to reduce that tax. And to protect the state, there's also a tax floor. This is to make sure Alaska still gets some revenue at lower prices. At that point, the state just takes a flat 4% of the value of a barrel of oil. And that's the world we've been in for the past year and a half. Here's Ken Alper, who directs the state tax division.
That 4% tax is our tax. We are in a minimum tax environment now for the foreseeable future.
But right now, we're at very, very low prices, under $40 a barrel. And at that point, the floor breaks. That's because at very low prices, even the big producers like ConocoPhillips, BP, and ExxonMobil start to lose money in Alaska. And so they can earn credits that dip below the floor, taking their taxes all the way down to essentially zero.
If the prices continue where they are, below $40 a barrel, in 2016, it's likely that all three of the major producers will be in an operating loss circumstance. They'll be losing money. Then beginning in 2017, they could use their credits to offset the floor and pay zero.
That's zero in production taxes. And let's be clear, the production tax isn't the only revenue the state gets from oil companies. The state still expects to take in about $1 billion a year from the oil industry, mostly in royalties. But in recent years, the production tax has been the major source of state revenue, bringing in more than $6 billion in 2012 alone. The Department of Revenue now forecasts it will drop to less than $16 million by 2018. And many lawmakers say they didn't see this coming, including House Speaker Mike Chenault, a Nikiski Republican.
I don't believe that we really talked a lot about what happens at low prices, because I don't believe anyone thought that we would be at $30 a barrel oil.
Governor Bill Walker has proposed what he calls hardening the floor, meaning making it impossible for companies to dip below that 4% minimum tax. He also wants to raise the floor to a 5% minimum. The House Resources Committee, the first to consider the bill, stripped out those provisions. And Kara Moriarty, president of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, says the ability to take production taxes to zero was always part of the deal.
We don't see that as a loophole. We understood that would be allowed. I just don't think people thought prices would ever get that low. If they did, we're all in a world of hurt. And guess what? We are all in a world of hurt.
Moriarty points out that in order to dip below the minimum floor, companies have to be operating at a loss in Alaska.
We are not generating enough revenue every day to pay our daily bills, because the price of oil is not covering the cost to transport or to produce a barrel of oil on the North Slope.
Hardening the floor could also hit smaller, newer companies that have yet to turn a profit in Alaska. Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican, has been critical of the current tax system since it was first approved in 2013. He says the issue is larger than minimum tax or no minimum tax.
If we're in the $40 price range, high 30s and $40 price range for the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to cripple the Treasury for 5-6 years.
That's because whether or not the state hardens the floor, the credits don't go away. They're carried forward into future years. So if companies take major losses at low oil prices, they can use that to reduce their taxes for years to come. Stedman says the previous tax system, with all its faults, allowed the state to make up that money if oil bounced back, with higher taxes at higher prices. That's no longer true.
This downside exposure we have today is extremely dangerous. We can't afford $35 and $40 a barrel oil because we can't recoup it on the upside to repair it.
Stedman says he hopes lawmakers can work with industry to find a different path forward. The legislature will be debating the oil tax credit bill over the next few weeks. From the Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.
The state government would buy the Legislative Information Office in downtown Anchorage for $32.5 million under a recommendation made last night by the Legislative Council. But it's not a done deal. The council's final offer is more than $1 million less than what the building owners have said they'd accept. Council Chairman Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens says the offer is similar to the cost to move the office to the state-owned Atwood building.
The council said 32.5 is the fair price, and we won't go any higher than that. So it's really now in the owner's hands, and he has to make that decision. Either he accepts that price or he doesn't. That's where we are.
The council voted 13-1 for the recommendation. It's the midpoint of two estimates that a consulting group prepared for the state. Big Lake Republican Representative Mark Newman was the only no vote.
Every time we have those requests, we try to solve the problem. And so far, we think we have every time. So if we can help achieve savings, we're willing to do it.
That was LAO co-owner Mark Pfeiffer. He says the building cost nearly $37 million, but he adds the owners would accept $3 million less. Before the council met privately for 2 hours, Pfeiffer said the owners have accommodated the state. The owners recently turned down an offer similar to the council's final recommendation, but ownership representative Amy Slinker says they're glad the council came to a decision. A Superior Court judge recently ruled the state lease for the building is illegal because the state didn't open it up to competitive bidding. The August 18th landslide in Sitka was unprecedented, claiming the lives of three men and raising safety concerns about the Benchlands, a strip of land nestled between the mountains and the ocean. The city sold four parcels, totaling 20 acres, to Sound Development LLC in 2013, and construction was in progress when the landslide hit, damaging one home and completely destroying another. Now, a lawsuit by one of those homeowners is raising legal questions about who is responsible, the city or the developer. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
On the morning of August 18, 2015, heavy rains generated a 1,000-foot landslide through Sitka's Kramer Avenue neighborhood, sweeping away the home of Christine McGraw. On December 4th, McGraw filed a complaint against Sound Development LLC, from whom she had purchased the lot. The Sitka-based developer is now demanding the city of Sitka come to its defense, compensate Sound for its losses, and ultimately hold them harmless for what happened. None of the attorneys involved in this case would comment or return KCAW's calls by press time, but we do have a paper trail of their letters. In a letter dated March 22, 2016, the lawyers representing Sound Development, Kim Stevens and Michael Lesmeyer, wrote to David Bruce, hired to represent Sitka. The letter reads, quote, "Neither the city, to our knowledge, nor Sound anticipated the landslide, but if Sound has any liability for the landslide, the city is the genesis of that liability." The letter goes on to quote the request for proposals, or RFP, put out by the city, which described the South Benchlands as prime development land for residential housing. Attorneys Stevens and Lesmeyer go on to say that in order to induce Sound to purchase the RFP land, the city led Sound to believe that the RFP land was suitable for development. They also say the city has, quote, an ethical and moral responsibility to protect residents when calamity strikes. In his response, Bruce refused to commit the city of Sitka to the defense of Sound Development and challenged their characterization of events. In a letter dated March 29, 2016, Bruce wrote, "The city of Sitka rejects as baseless your implication that CBS induced your client to purchase property under some false pretense or that CBS is the genesis of any liability your client may have." Last fall, the city hired Shannon and Wilson to perform a geotechnical survey on the mountainside between Jacob Circle and Emmons Street, where the landslide took place. Their subsequent report revealed that all zones were at risk for landslides to varying degrees. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the lies that Sitka surfers were told to protect their favorite riding spots.
It's really rocky. Most people I got usually end up dinging their boards up pretty bad. And yeah, I heard there's a lot of sharks out there.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Through generous APU scholarship packages and the new APU Promise Tuition Grant Program, APU is a sound educational investment in your future. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The State House passed a foster care improvement bill this afternoon. Under the new legislation, the state would put a stronger focus on finding foster kids permanent homes and prioritize placing them with relatives when possible. One provision requires the court system to ensure that the Office of Children's Services workers do their best to find long-term homes for children. The goal is to get the kids a permanent placement within 1 to 2 years of entering foster care. At the moment, more than 700 children in Alaska are looking for permanent homes, a much higher number than in other states. The bill's main sponsor is Anchorage Representative Les Guerra.
This bill aims to give people a better chance to succeed through a foster care system without damage, without being bounced between 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 homes. That in itself is neglect and abuse, the same neglect and abuse we're trying to prevent, just in a different form and an institutional one.
OCS will also continue to seek relatives of the children past the currently mandated first 30 days of out-of-home care. Research shows that children are more successful when placed with family or close friends. The bill also encourages more collaboration between OCS and Alaska Native groups. Though HB 27 passed unanimously, some legislators had reservations. Anchorage Representative Lance Pruitt shared a story about trying to help a young boy in foster care and seeing all of the problems the child faced. He said the bill didn't do enough.
There really is a broken system, an OCS system that is broken, and the management of it is not being done appropriately.
Others mentioned that foster care is reactive, and the government should instead be focused on prevention and treating societal problems like substance abuse. Guerra said the bill creates tools to address some of the current problems, but more needs to be done. The bill now goes to the Senate. The State House also passed a bill that would create Indigenous Peoples Day on the 18th of October every year. It coincides with Alaska Day, one of the state's official holidays. Anchorage Representative Harriet Drummond proposed the official holiday.
In times of challenge, let's remember those who've gone before us, who faced far greater challenges than we do, and who adapted and engineered and created and survived in this land we call home.
Representative Benjamin Nigiak from Barrow told the House he applauds the declaration, but reminds the representatives that it doesn't heal all wounds.
Setting aside a day will not get rid of the many problems that Indigenous people suffer every day in Alaska.
He listed problems like violence, alcoholism, and substandard housing. The original bill suggested the day coincide with Columbus Day, a federal holiday. Governor Bill Walker declared October 12, 2015, Indigenous Peoples Day, but it was a one-time designation. The bill also creates Katie John Day on May 31st in honor of the Otna elder who fought to protect subsistence rights. The bill now goes to the Senate. The 2016 Chamai Dance Festival starts tonight in Bethel. As KNOM's Laura Craigle reports, the festival will feature performers from all over the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and beyond.
This weekend, dozens of singers and dancers will take the stage for the 2016 Chamai Dance Festival, but it's the Bethel traditional dancers who will get the celebration started in their hometown tonight. They'll perform first after organizers light the ceremonial Chamai flame. Once the Bethel performers take their bows, other singers and dancers will get their turns over the course of the three-day festival. The scheduled performers hail from all over Western Alaska, from Hooper Bay to Barrow and Tuxuk Bay to Chivac. The long list includes Byron Nikolai, who's set to perform twice. Last year, the Tuxuk Bay teenager released his first album, I Am Yupik, and he'll perform at Chimay tonight and on Sunday. The festival will also feature a YK Delta Memoriam on Saturday. The slideshow of photographs will honor members of YK communities who have died in the last year. Sponsored by the Bethel Arts Council, the 2016 Chimay Dance Festival starts tonight at 5 o'clock in the Bethel Regional High School. The festivities will continue all weekend until the closing ceremonies set for 9 o'clock Sunday night. For KNOM, I'm Laura Craigle in Bethel.
A mapping project in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough indicates the area's watershed contains more miles of streams than previously known. Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer reports.
The total miles of Matsu streams has doubled as a result of a two-year stream mapping project. Jim DePasquale is a spatial ecologist, that's a geographer for the uninitiated, with the Nature Conservancy.
We ended up adding over 27,000 linear miles of streams to our existing body of knowledge of Matsu freshwater maps. And that was an extremely exciting discovery.
The new data is already being used in a project to pinpoint streams or portions of streams that support salmon during the early life stages of the fish. Other uses of the data include defining floodplain boundaries or stormwater drainages. But after two extremely dry winters in the Matsu, the map makers took climate change into account too.
Understanding where their channels are is integral to making those predictions of whether or not, you know, water flow or abundance or volume is affected by climate change. So this type of data would be very important and useful for climate modeling.
Importantly, the new stream charts meet national map accuracy standards and are now available to the public through the USGS database. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, surfing in Sitka. And no, this isn't an April Fool's joke. Warmer winters have pushed Sitka snowboarders and other adventurers out of the mountains and into the water. The ocean swell and rock breaks right near the heart of town create prime wave conditions. But locals are worried about revealing too much about their secret spot. KCAW's Brielle Schaefer has this story.
Art Freitas just moved to Sitka from Hawaii. He likes to take his mutt Finn for walks along Sandy Beach. And on a recent afternoon, he was a little stunned to see people surfing there.
I can't wait to take a shorter video and show this to a bunch of my friends and family. This is crazy.
Freitas didn't bring a board with him, but he's thinking of getting one. And a thicker wetsuit.
It's got to be cold out there, but it's got to be warm enough to be bearable. I mean, you even got a bodyboarder out there. That's awesome.
It may seem funny, but surfing in Sitka is no joke. When the conditions are right, usually in the hour window before and after high tide rolls in, dozens of surfers and bodyboarders don their 5mm wetsuits and get out on the only wave in town. Sandy Beach is on a main road about 3 miles from the heart of Sitka. And people aren't the only ones who enjoy the waves.
Seal surfing, otter surfing.
Human surfing.
That's self-described surf bunny Kitty Sopo. She likes to hang on the beach with her dog when the surf is up. Sandy Beach, known as Sandy's to the surf crew, is a bit of a misnomer. Rocks on the coast create the surf break. The shore is full of baseball-sized rocks and a few downed trees, which the surfers use to stash cans of Rainier beer. Sopo isn't too sure why surfing in Sitka is popular.
But I think it's because everyone here is super freaking cool.
Well, Jed D. Long certainly is. The commercial pilot grew up snowboarding in Sitka and local peaks. He always wanted to surf, but didn't start learning at Sandy's until about 5 years ago. It has been a good thing to pick up, especially in Southeast, where the warming winters have made for poor snow conditions.
Something to do. We usually get better swell in the winter, so this winter's been great for waves. There's been a lot of good swell.
But DeLong is a word of warning for those who are interested in Sitka surfing.
You probably don't want to do it.
The sport has grown here in recent years, and those who enjoy the waves are concerned the beach may get crowded. Several surfers declined to speak to me because they were afraid of selling out the spot, even though it's visible from the road. Cody Johns is a commercial fisherman based in Sitka who frequents Sandy Beach.
Oh yeah, this is a really bad spot. I definitely wouldn't recommend surfing here. It's really rocky. Most people I got usually end up dinging their boards up pretty bad. And yeah, I heard there's a lot of sharks out there.
He's joking, of course, but that attitude is part of the surf culture. The one wave can only accommodate so many, and they want to protect it.
Surfing in Sitka is probably one of the best-kept secrets on the West Coast.
That's Charlie Skolka, who says he helped pioneer cold water surfing in Alaska. It's still a secret because the community has guarded it over the years. That being said, he thinks the city could really capitalize on the adventure tourism market. Skolka thinks the city should consider putting in a man-made break that is accessible by the road.
It could be the first city in the nation to have an artificial reef. Once it's established, it doesn't cost money because waves are free.
Skolka says the best waves in Sitka are only accessible by boat. Kruzoff Island, about 10 miles west, is home to volcanic Mount Edgecombe.
Of course, the lava, that's all reef, lava reef. It makes for a nice hollow wave and very typical to what you'd find at some of the breaks in Hawaii, just a little cooler climate.
A lifelong Sitkin, Skolka began surfing after one of his friends found a board floating offshore. Skolka was doing some fiberglass boat work at the time, so his friend asked him to repair it. After a while, he figured he'd try it out.
So one day I drug that board down to Sandy Beach and caught my first wave and rode it all the way to the beach.
Then he spent another 6 weeks falling off the board until
I finally caught another wave and I was literally hooked.
He says when he started surfing in the 80s, he was one of only a handful of surfers in the state. Now there are dozens who catch waves daily in Sitka during the winter. But on Easter Day, Skolka got the break all to himself. And for an hour or so, it was just him and the ocean and some shoulder-high waves. For AK, I'm Brielle Schaefer.
Now it's time for 49 Voices, but this week we're doing something a little bit different. Our longtime editor and producer, Annie Feit, will be leaving Alaska News Nightly to manage Alaska's new regional journalism collaborative focused on energy and environment. While she'll still be heavily involved in making statewide news, she won't be the one editing frazzled reporters, wrangling deadlines, and making sure there's a story to air every night. As our editor, she may very well be furious we changed tonight's program without her permission. But we thought it was important to let her know how much she'll be missed.
Hi, Annie. This is Angela Denning. I remember reporting from Bethel for years when internet was so slow that I had to send you digital stories in pieces, and oftentimes they would stop loading midstream and we'd have to start all over. Your patience for those rural stories to form your show was so much appreciated. The best part, you didn't even seem stressed about it.
In Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld saying, we're really going to miss you, Annie. You make editing a collaborative experience. It isn't you telling me what I've screwed up on, although I probably have.
Hi, this is Anne, and I'm not going to miss you because you're just going to be down the hall. But you are the only person I would ever let completely invert one of my scripts. And I'll sing Justin Bieber for you at any time.
Hi, this is Quentin Chandler from KBBI in Homer.
And Daisha Eaton.
I'm going to go first. Annie, you've reshaped the way I think about writing for radio, for the better. And I can't say thank you enough.
Annie, when I asked for an edit, you always said yes, and my work is better for it.
Annie, this is Ed Ronco in Seattle. Without a doubt, you made me better at a time in my radio career when I was still kind of figuring out what radio was. You made my writing better, you made my reporting better, and you made me really like working in this medium. Thank you, Annie Fight, and good luck.
Hi, Annie. This is Emily Kwong from Raven Radio. You're kind and funny and gentle but firm. You give reporters the space to be creative. And in that spirit, I wrote you some limericks. In dark corners, us reporters, we write, wishing someone would turn on the light. Fix our lead with great speed. She's the lighthouse we need. Our captain, our queen, Annie Fight.
Hi, Annie. It's Ashley Gross, your number one fan. You have this knack for just kind of cutting to the chase and understanding the heart of something and not getting lost in the details. And you have such enthusiasm for the things that you report about, whether it's health insurance, somehow you are able to make it really interesting and tell human stories about that, or going and crawling around on the ice looking at walrus, or heading out in an icebreaker with a bunch of scientists. I think the world of you. I know you're going to do great things in your new role. You are singular and unique and a wonderful, wonderful person and a wonderful reporter and editor. All the best.
Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Brielle Schaefer, Wesley Early, and Annie Fight. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Laura Craigle in Nome, and Ellen Lockyer in Palmer. Our editor and producer for the final time is Annie Fight. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Ann Hillman. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Alaska's tobacco quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
The Alaska Public Radio Network, in cooperation with our member stations, provides the most complete, timely, and accessible source of Alaska news, current affairs, and cultural information.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.